Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Speak up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hello, morning. It's me, Jesse, back from the Maritimes here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. Very privileged and grateful and thankful to be here on the eve of National Indigenous Peoples Day, and reflecting on what that means to be here on unceded land, and speaking to you, presumably also out there on unceded land, unless you're listening online, from abroad, outside of the region. But in one way or another, probably on land that someone else occupied at some point in the past. And we all have a long and complicated history with the land we occupy, whether it is ours sort of by birthright, or if we have moved there, or whatever. So it's always good to be examining those relationships, thinking about where you fit in, and how you can honor those that came before, and make sure that they are doing all right in terms of access to the place that they come from. I mentioned right off the top that I am back from the Maritimes. I spent last week in Nova Scotia, a day and a half, well, a day and a morning in Halifax, and then the rest of the time up in Cape Breton in Sydney, Nova Scotia, for the National Campus Community Radio Conference, the NCRC, in Sydney, hosted by the Coast out there. And it's always good to reconnect with a whole bunch of other community radio-minded folks, do some workshops, listen to all sorts of interesting guests, from other station members to you know, folks at the Community Radio Fund of Canada, other parts of the industry, a sitting senator, all sorts of people, and some music and stuff, entertainment as well, of course. So we are going to, well, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. We're going to hear some reports from the Local Journalism Initiative from around BC to get you some local and local-ish news. And as always, there will be a little bit of music. And as always, we will be starting with some local music. This track is, well, an artist you've heard before on Speak Up and my other program, The Vancouver Mixtape. If you're a listener of either, Future Star is a current star of the Vancouver independent music scene. And their first, well, no, not their first. It feels like that. Well, their first release on Mint Records is out July 5th. It's called It's About Time. And for the, well, to this point, the entirety of Selena's career as Future Star, it has been a very DIY, lo-fi pop project with, you know, melodies and hooks and lyrics that, despite their apparent simplicity, worm their way into your brain and become part of your mental landscape. So this new release, upcoming release, takes all of that and adds just the finest layer of shine and shimmer on top, slightly upgraded production values, I suppose, a wider a range of sounds and instruments. And I'm very excited. It's about time that we get to hear a record like this from Vancouver's future star. So we're going to hear that is out now to promote the album. This is My Bright Fantasy by Future Star.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started, so I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was My Bright Fantasy by Future Star off the upcoming record It's About Time, which comes out July 5th, so just a couple weeks from now. Very excited for that. And now I think we're going to turn to our first local-ish news story of the day. This comes from Frequency News, which is a project of the Local Journalism Initiative, which is a program that is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and allows for community media, not just radio stations, but other community media outlets to hire a journalist to provide local news content, because it's very work intensive to provide any sort of breaking or near breaking news coverage. It takes a lot of time and a lot of hours, and you got to pay for that to get real high quality work on a consistent basis. And so, shout out to the Local Journalism Initiative. And the first story we're going to hear is from CKTZ on Cortez Island in British Columbia, one of the Gulf Islands there, which is about a local to Cortez Island returning as a grad student to research community health amid all the ongoing climate events. So we'll hear that, and then we will be back.
This is a CKTZ News Update. I'm Louis Belcour.
A local to Cortez Island is doing their master's thesis study on the health of the community in response to climate change. Kiara Sakonos, pursuing a Master's of Science in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University, aims to explore the effects of climate events on the well-being of Cortez Island residents and how our responses to climate events can help mitigate the damage done to our health and to our community. Sakonos will interview willing participants involved in the social profit and nonprofit sectors on Cortez to learn about our responses to climate events and, quote, how disaster risk measures at the community scale can have co-benefits for human, animal, and ecosystem health, end quote. I spoke with Kiara for more.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kiara Tsakonos, and I grew up on Cortez Island, and now I'm coming back to Cortez. I find myself continuously coming back, but I'm coming back to Cortez to do my master's thesis research this summer.
So tell me about your master's thesis study and how it's going to involve Cortez residents.
Yeah, my thesis is centered around understanding how the relationships between animals and ecosystems and humans can be used to better inform disaster risk reduction practices, specifically in the context of climate change. And so what that looks like in practice is I'm coming to Cortez and I'm hoping to interview people who are involved in providing essential services or involved in kind of civil society on Cortez to see what climate change events they've experienced and how they're responding to them, and then what values in terms of how they understand their health are reflected or not reflected in how they're responding to climate change.
On your post asking for interview subjects, you were asking for community members who are involved in social profit, nonprofit organizations, and the provision of essential services to participate. Why are these people's voices important to your study?
Yeah, so I chose to look specifically at folks who are involved in providing essential services and working in kind of the social profit, nonprofit organization sector, because in a place like Cortez Island, where we don't have the same kind of municipal infrastructure, a lot of services are provided by civil society organizations. And specifically, when large disasters happen, it's oftentimes civil society that steps in to provide a lot of emergency response. And the more mitigation measures that we can do at the community level with these types of organizations, the better. And so I'm hoping to speak to folks who are involved in doing this work already and trying to understand what they're doing right now and whether or not they take into account multiple different values when they're choosing to mitigate something like wildfires or something like flooding. And so that's why I've chosen to specifically look to interview these folks.
So what are you trying to learn about our community's response to climate events?
Yeah, so I think what I'm hoping to provide is a snapshot of where we're at and where we're going from a kind of meta level, looking at the host of different services that are provided on Cortez by like nonprofit organizations and understanding how are folks responding, what are folks experiencing, and what types of values are they putting forward in terms of how they're responding and building capacity to future climate change events. Perhaps that's not even something that's on a lot of folks' radar, or maybe it is something, but I'm interested in, yeah, creating a little bit of a snapshot of what that looks like, because I think it's important to have or to track these types of things on a community scale. And I'm like, my work is around climate change, but specifically, I'm not super focused on the mitigation side. I'm more focused on the disaster risk reduction side, which means planning for future climate events and mitigating the impact of them specifically on humans. But I also want to bring into the space the voices of ecosystems and animals in terms of how we design those interventions.
So what benefits do disaster risk reduction measures that you're talking about here have for our community's health?
My project is located in the Faculty of Health Sciences, but my approach to health is more of a holistic approach to health than kind of the absence of disease. And so when I'm talking about community health, I'm talking about all of the different aspects that lead into what makes a healthy person, what makes a healthy community, what makes a healthy ecosystem. And so I'm thinking about things like water security or food security or housing and all the things that let us lead a fulfilling and good life. And so disaster risk reduction measures can help ensure that when a disaster does happen or when a climate event does happen, that we're trying to preserve or protect the things that are really valuable in constructing our health and our health as a community. And for example, that might be something like wildfire mitigation around housing, because housing is a really important social determinant of health. What I'm interested to see too is just when we are doing these types of disaster risk reduction measures like wildfire mitigation, we're accounting for human health, we're accounting for ecosystem health, and I'm interested to see what sort of overlap there is for human and animal and ecosystem health when we're doing these kind of local interventions.
Louis Bocor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Take a look at our program lineup at cjsf.ca to discover the diverse range of contents we bring to you.
magic wand.
Is getting out of the way of Mother Nature on Sumas Prairie cheaper and perhaps even justified? The authors of a University of British Columbia research paper probed this question, now nearly 3 years after the November 2021 flood and 100 years after the waters of Sumas Lake were drained to make way for the farms that dot the lake bed today. The paper's lead writer is Riley Finn. He's a staff researcher in UBC's Conservation Decisions Lab. Finn says the paper has three angles.
One of them was to really kind of situate the history of how Sumas Lake became Sumas Prairie. Then we wanted to get an understanding of, you know, what are the potential costs of returning the lake? And, you know, what does a potentially more inclusive process for determining the future look like? And so to get at those second two pieces, we looked at the assessed land values that come from BC assessments, and we overlaid historical mapping of the lake boundary on top of those.
Finn says to then determine a future with a restored Sumas Lake, the paper draws on the RELAW program.
Revitalizing Laws for Land and Water, which is a program run out of West Coast Environmental Law, and they worked a lot with First Nations and the Lower Fraser to kind of codify legal codes from oral histories and community dialogue.
My name is Maureen Ed. Ancestral name is Klawsentin from Tsamath. And I guess a couple of capacities, Mike. I'm a former counselor for Tsamath First Nation, but I remain as an advisor to the nation, specific to this file. And then also I work for the Lower Fraser Fisheries Alliance as their executive director.
And Ned's family tree is directly connected to the opposition to draining the lake in the first place.
My late great grandfather was the chief back then. His name was Selsmilton. That was his ancestral name. And he was the one that opposed the lake back, well, the draining of the lake back in the 1920s, but they proceeded anyway. So
Ned worked closely with Finn on this paper.
We don't want to do the same kind of displacement that the nation and our ancestors that lived there before when the lake was drained. We know what it's like to be displaced. We know what it's like to lose that piece of the ecosystem. And today it's invaluable.
The paper explores a path where the Sumas Prairie becomes something of a hybrid of what the area looks like today, mixed with what it might have looked like a century ago.
There are stories from back when the lake still existed of, you know, cattle being grazed and crops being raised around the lake. So this was something that was occurring before the lake was gone, and I don't think it's unreasonable to imagine a future of some of both with a more resilient to potential flooding events.
The lake was renowned for having all five salmon species plus steelhead and wildlife, elk running around here.
And how does a revitalized lake bed make inroads toward reconciliation?
We would be interested in return of the lake if it didn't have such an impact on the local people. And so perhaps what we're after is maybe something in between that doesn't affect the people and the agricultural industry as much. And if there's, you know, willingness for people to think about a bit of a transformation from what we're doing today.
The study estimates a managed retreat buying up lake bed properties would cost about $1 billion, less than half of the $2.4 billion cited by the paper to bolster flood mitigation infrastructure.
So when we looked at kind of the overlay of the lake bed with the surrounding properties, we found that the assessments data attached to kind of the parcels in the region were about $1 billion in terms of the assessed values. And so, yeah, those might be different than what the market values are, but, you know, the data we have is the BC assessments data. So that's what we found, looking at kind of a broad area in terms of the lake bed, as well as the surrounding floodplain around it.
Politically, Abbotsford Mayor Ross Seaman says the concept is a non-starter.
Not on my watch.
Seaman thinks the report has, quote, so many inconsistencies, end quote.
Just based on reality, but I would invite people to come and take a look at what is happening on Sumas Prairie and get your head in the game. That is a no-go on my estimation.
Seaman says protecting the farmland on the Sumas Prairie is critical.
Well, this is the most valuable farmland in the country, the most productive. The fact is, where do we find arable land like that anywhere else in the province? So our food security, number one, this is people's livelihoods. These are third, fourth generation farmers that are now responsible for, you know, 50 to 60% of our dairy and poultry in the entire province of British Columbia are coming out of Abbotsford, and a vast majority of that's coming out of that prairie. People have invested their livelihoods are here, their homes. That is just absolutely ridiculous.
When it comes to food security, Ned draws a through line from today to the past.
It's an irony. To me, as a nation member, it's an irony. They determined it was feasible to drain the lake back then and get rid of the food security that they had in the form of the lake. And then today, you know, they're talking about hanging on to industry and all the economic and livelihood considerations that occur with that. So, you know, I guess what we're looking at is trying to figure out a balance between what we have today and what we had in the past.
Let's not forget that British Columbia has to import food too. It's a two-way street. We can't just rely on others to be supplying our food. That is absolutely, you know, in today's changing world, when people are trying to protect their own areas, I mean, for us to just cut loose on food security is, you know, that is just a ridiculous notion from my perspective.
Finn says the paper tries to imagine a future where a version of Sumas Lake could be an economic engine for the Fraser Valley.
Like tourism and recreation, and how the value of the lake might bring people to the region in terms of, you know, the economically important species that it might support, such as salmon and sturgeon. You know, what is the value of recreational fishing and food and ceremonial fisheries for the nations, as well as commercial fisheries that the lake might help produce. So there are lots of potential knock-on positive effects that, you know, we would have to essentially spend quite a bit of time trying to model out in order to get a proper idea of, you know, what are the costs and benefits.
We want it to be productive. We want the water to be healthy. We want the associated species, salmon and other wildlife, to be able to utilize it in a good way.
For now, Mayor Seamans is unambiguous.
Just to assure that my residents that I've got their back on this one, and I will go to the wall on that.
As for Finn, he's not fazed when confronted with opposition to the premise of a revitalized lake.
Our lab looks at decision science, and so, you know, really getting a broad view of the potential alternatives and considering, you know, what are the values that we're really trying to achieve. I think we just kind of saw that the broadest set of alternatives weren't really being considered, and there might be value in, you know, bringing a broader discussion.
For Civil Radio, I'm Mike McCullough. This story was made possible by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. For this story and more, visit frequencynews.ca. Is getting out of the way of Mother Nature on Sumas?
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories. Local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.